Welcome to the Speak Up Talk Radio Network, home of the Firebird Book Awards, the Positive Change Podcast Awards Hall of Fame, and this podcast, Authors on Fire. I am Pat Rulo. Today, I have a recent and returning Firebird Book Award winner to share with you, Kathy J. Perry, and the book is titled Finding Strength. Kathy says, "Of the many jobs I've held in the past, teaching was one of the most enjoyable for me. Investing in kids is so important. To this end, I continue to encourage good character with clean, moral stories kids and teens love to read." She asks, "Do you have a favorite book that has shaped your worldview?" Writing is hard work, but there's nothing like a good story to run off with your imagination. When things are flowing, it's like a vacation. Sometimes the best ideas come in the middle of the night. When not writing, you will find Kathy painting with watercolor, visiting schools, writing a blog, interviewing other writers, designing websites, working as an administrative assistant part-time, and occasionally renovating houses. She wonders if this is retirement and says apparently so, and says she's loving every minute of it with her husband of 42 years. And I say I just love her zest for life. Welcome back to the network, Kathy.
Thank you so much, Pat.
Oh,
that's a great introduction.
It is, and you wrote it.
Well, it's true.
Well, you know, you asked the question, do you have any favorite books that shaped your worldview? And I don't know if this one actually shaped my worldview, but it is a book I have never forgotten. And what's really funny, Kathy, is I could still see its location on the bottom shelf in my elementary school library. And it's called The Pink Motel by Carol Ryrie Brink. And so just a couple of weeks ago, I was thinking about it. And so I went online and you can't find the old hardback with the really good pink cover, but I did buy the paperback. And I have to tell you, I spent the most lovely few hours rereading this book. And then I thought, I love this so much. I sent it to my 9-year-old granddaughter and she just thought it was just so fabulous. It's like traveling back to a time of innocence. It was wonderful.
Yes. I like to be there all the time.
Isn't that the truth? It's so funny, though, how just rereading words that you read maybe when you were 7 or 8 years old takes you back.
Yes. There's a book that inspired the whole Emmeline series. That was one of my favorite books. It's called Adventures of Perrine. Some people call her Perrine, P-E-R-R-I-N-E. It's written by an 1800s author, and it's not in print anymore. I think you can maybe still buy some copies, you know, that are used off of Amazon.
Right.
But it is a story about an orphan girl who goes in search of her grandfather after she loses her parents, and kind of the same situation, but different, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I just admired that writing so much. Even now, I have two copies of it. Even now, I love to read it. In September, it's going to be part of a blog tour. But both of the Emmeline books will be part of a blog tour, which I'm hoping that'll, you know, get in the hands of more readers, too.
Well, I hope the Firebird Book Award win helps as well. So congratulations on that.
Thank you. And I'm having my cover designer put that sticker on, so it'll be on all the books.
I
have the stickers, too, so I'm putting on the books that I have.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm really proud. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you for joining us. I'm so happy about it. And so last time we had an opportunity to speak about your Firebird winning book titled A Journey. And so today let's focus a little bit on Finding Strength during the pandemic of 1893, book 2 in the Emmeline series. Maybe give us a peek into that.
Yes. Well, okay. So this orphan who was rescued by a couple, an older couple, in Indianapolis on her way to meet her grandfather. She was injured and they rescued her, and she kind of adopted this family in the last book. And she's been happily living there since 1890. And then this book starts in 1893. And then she still has the family farm, but back in Kearney, Missouri, but she's left it in the hands of a caretaker. And the mercantile manager, owner, Mr. Pickwick, and she's gets a letter from her ex-teacher telling her that she needs to come back home because Mr. Pickwick is ill and she needs to handle some farm business because he's maybe not likely to be able to handle it anymore. So she's forced to make a decision, go, whether she should stay, if she goes, is she coming back, and then things just escalate from there. And then you have all of the events that happened in 1893, probably the spring of 1893, when the panic started and everything in the United States, everything. Well, even before that it changed, but especially that year and on into 1897, there were so many, there was a big depression. It was like the 30s, maybe the 1930s, but different. You went from everybody was a kind of pioneering and on their own and homesteading and that kind of thing to you've got a few people in charge, like, say, the Vanderbilts, the Rockefellers, Mr. Carnegie, J.P. Morgan, and some of those high-ranking people. And they just kind of turned everything. Unions started. Unions were squelched. Different kinds of things happened. There was a lot of money changing. They got rid of the gold standard, and then it was just there was banks closing and different kinds of things. So supply and demand really was a thing. Really, it didn't used to be a thing because everybody would just, if they needed shoes, they would just go to their local shoemaker, which was called a cordwainer. And or if they needed a saddle, they had somebody who worked in leather and they would make saddles and things like that locally. But then when the trains came about, the cross-country trains, well, then things began, and also the Second Industrial Revolution, so like a lot of things were being made in bulk. So things started to change as far as how you could receive goods, even things like food, over the rails. It was a big change. And ice, even ice, was a thing. Lots of changes. The main thing of this book is the strength of her character, and you'll see her character growth. She goes from not wanting to, she doesn't like change. She's afraid of change. She likes being in comfortable old shoes. She doesn't really like anything new or different. She doesn't really like change. Well, now she's thrown into all of this change and change upon change upon change. And by the end, she embraces it. That's the main thing. But on the side of that, there's all this history, mm-hmm. because I did do a lot of research. And in the back of the book, there's an addendum about what I learned while researching, and I covered all kinds of things, like what we just talked about. Mm-hmm. Monetary changes, political changes, technology changes. Bicycles was a thing, not in small towns, but big towns. Automobiles started to come around, but not really. In small towns, utilities. In the big cities, you had indoor plumbing where you didn't used to. Electricity. Well, there was an interesting thing I learned about electricity. Thomas Edison is best known with developing the DC current in New York. And I didn't know this, but Tesla worked with Edison for 6 months for a salary of $25 per week, but left to form his own company in New Jersey. Mm. And following Edison was Westinghouse, who developed the more economic AC current, mm-hmm. which traveled over long distances with less amperages and smaller wires. Wow. And the three companies vied for electrifying the World's Fair in Chicago in 1893, which I don't really cover the World's Fair, mm-hmm. but I mention it in the back because I did discover this. Westinghouse won the honor of electrifying that fair. Wow. So that was interesting.
Isn't that fascinating? It's just not something you would even think to research, but thank you for putting that in the back of the book because that just illuminates your topic uh-huh. a little bit further.
Yeah, who knew mm-hmm. that Tesla worked for $25 a week? Yeah. And then there was a refrigeration, which that whole thing was developing. And then that was, you know, changed the way food was stored and all. Telegraph and telephone, mail, print, of course, all kinds of things changed. So it's very, you'll feel immersed in that period. You'll kind of feel what it's like. Also, there's a lot of, not a lot, but there's a few Bible verses in here because at that time, Emmeline has always been a faith-based person and a Christian. And in this period, in the 1890s, most of the people in America were, and it wasn't uncommon to have faith in your life. Okay. So I don't dwell on that, but she does have some verses that she pulls out while she's reading that help her through her changing.
Well, yes, it was part of the time, so it's, you know, it's just part of the fabric of life then. You mentioned character education, and I know that's what you really hone in on with your books. You even have that, I don't know if it was on Instagram or on your website, but character education through story. Why is that important to you?
Well, I see so many people struggling. And I work part-time, as you know, 3 days a week. And the people that I work with are laborers, except for in the office, of course. But the people that I work with in the company are laborers. And these laborers that come from high schools that are, you know, maybe they graduated, most of them did graduate. And some are from another country, but they're legally here. And there's just such a, what happened to... Some of them, I wonder, where were your parents? Where were you? You know, I mean, I just don't know. So I think when I write, it's because I want to get these kinds of books into the hands of the younger generation so they don't end up like some of these. Mm-hmm. I just see that as a need in today's world. I guess my market is mostly people that have the same need. You know, they want to see values, original, you know, homespun values with their children when they're reading books, you know, that kind of thing.
Right.
I am not woke. Sorry. I am more of a unifying person. I am not a divisive person.
Yes. And what better way to teach our young people than through reading?
With having Bible verses in here, that's going to eliminate me from the public school world.
Mm-hmm.
I'll be embraced by the Christian and, you know, like, homeschool world, and the libraries will stock it, and maybe some bookstores. But I am kind of eliminating myself, at least with this category, with these books, from public schools, because they won't allow it,
which
is sad. I can still do it with my younger books because I don't mention any faith things in those. They're just about character qualities, which everybody should embrace, you know?
Right. Exactly. So as you're writing, what do you think are the key elements to make a successful children's book? Because obviously you've won awards, so you're doing something right. What is needed to make a children's book or a preteen or young adult book successful?
Where to start? The first thing you need is a decent story, and the story needs to have five elements in it, and those are not just setting in place and time and that, you need that too, but the five elements I'm talking about are who do we care about? Number one, who do we care about? So there has to be like a character that we care about. Number two, what does this character want? Sometimes it's what do they think they want and what do they really want? And that's the second thing. The third thing is what do they fear or dread? So like in Emmeline's case, she doesn't like change. So that's kind of her dread, but she comes later to embrace that because she has a character arc, so she changes. Usually there's a change somewhere because the fourth thing is struggles. So they have to have, in a story, any story, they have to have some kind of struggle. The longer the story, the more struggles they can have. If it's just a little picture book, you might just have, you know, a short struggle, but you're going to have some kind of struggle usually, unless it's just like an ABC book or something. And then the fifth thing is something to learn. So hopefully at the end of the story, they've learned, even if they don't win, they may have learned something.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you look at movies, you can identify when you're watching the movie, well, this is who we care about. What do they want? You know what they want. And then, you know, if it's a good movie, you'll have all five of those things.
Mm-hmm.
The next thing is I would say, well, you're going to write, and I would write regularly, like every, not necessarily every day, but just set yourself like a little goal for the week, how many words you want to write, like on the novel, and then just try to put that in. And even if it's not good, just do it. Because, you know, it may be a little rabbit trail that you need to take in order to get somewhere else. And you might not even use it, but it might help you to get somewhere else.
Right.
And after you've finished your first draft, or maybe your second or third or fifth, you can have a beta reader, some friend read it, or not necessarily your mom or something, but, you know, somebody in a book club or somebody in an organization, or even just someone to read it and see what they think. And give you some feedback, but not your mom, because she's always going to love it.
Right.
And then of course, you would always have it professionally edited by someone. They could do an editorial review and give you some, like, structure pointers of things you might have missed, any gaps of things, any things that suggestions that would improve it. Mm-hmm. That always helps, too.
Right.
And then professional book covers, interior design, and printing.
Right.
If you're printing, some people just do ebooks.
Right. What do you think of ebooks for children, though?
Children actually read ebooks that much.
Right.
Especially younger children.
Yeah.
The tactile part of holding the book, turning the pages, smelling the ink, maybe, is part of it, part of the whole thing. So I think physical books are better than ebooks, honestly. Mm-hmm. Some people like ebooks. I like a book in my hand.
Yes. Yes, me too. And maybe it's an age thing. Maybe we didn't grow up reading on devices. You know, as I recall that experience in my elementary school library, there was just so much to feel that cover of that book. And it's obviously mm-hmm. did have a smell. Turning the pages, as you say, there was just so many other senses that go along with it, that it stays with you, that to this day, I still have a difficult time when someone says, read my book, and they send me the e-copy. It's still a little difficult for me to feel wholly involved in it as I would sitting comfortably with the book in hand. So it's mm-hmm. that's interesting. Mm-hmm. But especially for children, I think, as you say, there's a lot more learning lessons that go on other than just mm-hmm. what you might find inside the book.
Yes.
Yes.
And even especially the very young, when they're just learning to read.
Yep.
You know, they really need to have it in their hand. I don't think a screen does it justice.
No, not at all. Not at all. So your book, Finding Strength During the Panic of 1893, this is book two. Is there a book three or four coming along?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I thought about it, and then I thought, I could write like a little, I might write something that's like, not an addendum, but something like, well, this is what's happened the next year with her, and just like a short story.
Mm-hmm.
And I could use that like in marketing.
Yes.
You know, saying, here, you know,
yeah,
if you like this, you know, here's this, a little bonus. Unless I don't know, because you know, like the books, Little House on the Prairie.
Yes.
Everybody loved those books. When she got to the golden years and she was married to Alonzo, mm-hmm. I really didn't care after that. I identified with her as a youngster,
yes.
But when she turned into an adult, I was pretty much done.
You were over it. Yeah. Sometimes you have to know when to stop in all things in life, and including a book series.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The only other thing I might think about is maybe take a character out of it and make them a story, but
right.
I don't see that happening right now.
Yeah.
Right now, I'm in the middle of writing another early chapter book series for young people, early readers. So I've already written three stories, and I'm on the fourth. I'm hoping to have all five done by next April and ready to launch next April.
Yes, you mentioned to me the difference between chapter books and early chapter books.
Right. It's just a shorter word count, page count. There's more pictures, more illustrations than in a chapter book. Mm-hmm. They may be in color versus in black and white, which most chapter books have little spot illustrations that sometimes are little sketches.
Right.
but these are more illustration. So they're for basically first and second graders who are learning to transfer from reading picture books to chapter books, but they're not really ready for the bigger books yet. So it's for that sweet spot of first and second grade, even though they could be read earlier and later.
Sure. Kind of like a bridge book.
Yep.
So let's talk a bit about the cover. I believe it won for book cover, similar to the style of your first cover.
So it's one of Claudia's illustrations that's on the front. And then the cover designer put this silhouette of a bull. Actually, it's a cow. I don't know. I guess we had to make it have horns. And they do have horns back in the 1890s. Anymore, dairy farmers remove horns. And even now, and that's another thing that's a big, you'll learn a lot about is dairy farming in this book, besides all the history, because there's a lot of dairy farming information you'll get from this book here. What it's like to run a dairy farm. That's going to be fun. You know, cows are pretty strong.
Yes.
So it just kind of, if you open that up and you look at the back cover, it just kind of continues. The cow's body is back there.
Mm-hmm.
He pretty much used the same kind of fonts and everything that he did in the first book, except for a little difference of color and this and the picture.
Well, you can definitely tell they are part of a series.
Mm-hmm.
Which is what you wanted.
There's illustrations inside, too, which we included in the first book, too. And you'll see, they're black and white, however. They're not in color, but they're still beautiful. But there's like 8 or 9 illustrations inside the book, and they're really well done. They're, if you just flip through, you'll see there's like a little board, a little fun border around them and everything. It's very nicely done inside. I should send you a book, actually.
That would be lovely. I would love to hold one of your books in my hands.
Yeah, I'll send you both of them.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah.
So these new early chapter books that you're working on now, same kind of character education through story, different themes. How is that working for these new books?
The new one is going to be about, it's another one with animals, so there's no people in it. But this is going to be about animals that live in the woods in the Midwest, America, and they are usually ignored or discouraged or killed or people don't like them. But anyway, these characters, okay, the first book is Pip Opossum, and it's about an opossum. And his story is he's a lazy bum is what he is. And so he has to learn that you can't get anywhere without working hard. So work before play is a subtitle. So that's Pip Opossum, and so cute. I mean, my illustrator, she was like, oh, please tell me we're not going to have a turkey vulture. And I said, oh, yes, we're going to have a turkey vulture. He's going to be in every book. He's going to be the wise one. So she's like, oh, dear. Okay. So she's been challenged. And this turkey vulture's name is Boone, B-O-O-N.
Ooh.
And she came up with this clever idea, giving him an aviator hat. So he's got this aviator hat with goggles.
Oh.
It's so great. And a scarf, you know, kind of like the Red Baron. So it's great. And that's Boone. And then the second story is Sally Skunkskin, and it's about a skunk, and her subtitle is Humbles to Grateful. So she starts off as nobody likes her, so she doesn't like anybody, and she's very critical. But at the end, she has friends, she learns how to make friends.
Aww.
And that's her story, Sally Skunkskin. Great illustrations. I just got the final ones yesterday. Oh, another thing that we're doing in this, too, we're hiding a little thing, a little critter, in every illustration for the kids to find, little kids to find. Like the first one, Pip's story has a snail.
Mm-hmm.
So you had to find the snail. And the second one is mantis, a praying mantis. So you have to find that. And then the third one is about a bat. Now, really, And so it's a specific bat. It's called a hoary bat, H-O-A-R-Y.
I know them, yes. Yes, hoary bats.
That's a word for either gray or white.
Right.
So she's like, these are so ugly. How am I going to do this? I said, no, these are the best looking bats. So anyway, she's getting on to the bats next. And so she's going to, Benjamin Bat is the name of that book. And his story is going to be, it's about humility. So he starts off and he's all proud and isolated and doesn't meet anybody. And then by the end, he's got friends. And he realizes he's not alone in the world. Yeah.
These are all life lessons.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's the goal. You're supposed to identify with the with the character.
Yep.
And you may even know somebody that are like Sally or Pip or, you know.
Yep.
And then the fourth book, which I haven't started, is Nuts. And it's about some squirrels. And it's going to be about teamwork. And the fifth book is, the last one is about, a crow. It's Chester Crow. And his story is going to be about self-control because he likes to collect things.
Ooh, yes. We've got a lot to look forward to, and you are challenging your illustrator.
Yes, I am.
That's so fun.
Yeah, but she does such a great job.
Yes, yes.
Well, and then I send her illustrations to the cover designer, and then he does a great job, too.
Well, it sounds like you've really assembled the perfect dream team for these books.
Yeah.
Yep. Well, good. I look forward to these. Sally Skunkskin?
Skunkskin.
Skunkskin.
So skunk and skin.
Skunkskin. That's fun to say.
Well, I kind of, you know, I was looking at Beatrix Potter books, and there's a squirrel called something Nutkin.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So I kind of like Nutkin.
Yeah.
And
Skunkskin.
So I kind of drew off that.
I like it. Oh my gosh, this is so good. Yeah. Thank you for sharing all this goodness with us. I'm happy we had this conversation. Anything we missed that you wanted to highlight today?
The best way to buy my books is through my website because it's, there's no middleman there and it's a little cheaper. Just go to KathyJPerry.com mm-hmm. and help yourself. So there's a shop there you can go to.
Right.
Or you can just read about everything.
Yes.
Too.
Yes. Good website. Yes. All righty. Well, we are speaking with Kathy J. Perry. Her first book we spoke about a couple months ago was titled A Journey. And today we talked about Finding Strength, book 1 and 2 of the Emmeline series. And all of the goodies coming up, the early chapter readers, I can't wait for those. Kathy J. Perry, thank you so much for joining us again. And I look forward to doing this again sometime.
Thank you. And oh, don't forget the Kathy's with a K. And it's when you type it in, sometimes you'll see Katy Perry. And I'm like, no. Which is why I put the J in there. Kathy J. Perry.
Absolutely. I fight with the Amazon search bar constantly when I look for your books. And I put in Kathy Perry. I get Katy Perry. They take the H out as if I don't know how to spell. So then I have to put Kathy J. Perry.
Yeah.
So yes, a word of warning to those that do some digging on Amazon or just go to her website, KathyJPerry.com.
Thank you so much.
You are awesome. Thank you so much.
All right. See you next time.